Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Action, sports, travel, and lifestyle. All elements of Edge TV, one of two programming ventures from Smart TV products that we'll highlight today. Edge President Ian Woods joins me next in Los Angeles. The second is Shorts Channel, presenting a cornucopia of short segments from around the globe. OddPop is the backer of this service, and you'll hear Chief Executive Paige Williams next hour. In between, we'll explore representation counts, joining other advocacy institutions up to expand diversity on TV, on and off the camera. We'll speak later this hour with founder Shireen Anus. Also ahead, Saved by the Bell rings, a bloody disgusting debut, our new classic trivia question, and time for a new segment, Reboot This. Hey everyone, I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, speaker and tuner radio, and presented on Amazon Music and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy Tuesday afternoon to all of you, and welcome once again to the program All About TV's Current and Future. It's our last one for the month of September 2020. Happy to have you with us. 73 degrees, top of the hour, on a very unsettled day, you might say, here in the Big Apple. We had some showers earlier. We expect some showers tonight, overnight, and into Wednesday. Got a great trio of guests coming your way over the next 90 minutes, and we invite you to be part of the program. Get in the conversation. Soon you do, soon we hear you. So just pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, speaker and tuner radio. And we've got a chat room going. Spence B. has already entered the room, so why not join Spence B. at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Either with the phone or the room, we will hear you. And while the phone is on the air, you can connect to others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk speaker, tune-in screen, follow the instructions so other people can be live with you. Ian Woods, Red TV, live from L.A. after these news notes. Saved by the Bell's return is set day before Thanksgiving. Peacock's new treatment of the uber-popular Saturday morning NBC teen comedy of decades past begins November 25th, with Elizabeth Berkley Lawrence and Mario Lopez back as Jesse Spano and A.C. Slater, respectively. Original producer Peter Engel, who was on this program not so long ago, also returns behind the scenes, and Tracy Wingfield is acting and executive produced this same version for Peacock. Later in today's episode, we'll spotlight Shorts Channel, which launched last week. However, Cinedigm, the programming service distributor involved, kicked off another venture earlier today. Bloody Disgusting, and I'm not making the title up. It is called Bloody Disgusting. It's an old horror mix of classic and recent scare picks with original script and unscripted content. Roku is the venture's first smart TV outpost, with others in the works. Other recently added Roku services include The Crapistry, Circle, that's the Nashville-based country music service that we spotlighted on New Year's Week, Happy Kids TV, which we spotlighted earlier this month from Future Day, that's the distributor of that venture, VNN, the Video Game Entertainment News Network, and Weather Spy. All, by the way, both of which were also carried subjects of recent episodes. Now, some quickies. Three TV categories will be introduced in the annual Independent Spirit Awards. IFC will present the 2021 edition April 24th. No more racism allegations on America's Got Talent, thanks to a settlement reached between NBC and former AATC judge Gabriel Union. Two Netflix items. Season 4 of The Crown will unspool November 15th, and the service will present a Dolly Parton starring holiday film probably around December. Mr. Roller creator Sam Esmail is developing two series at ABC, Acts of Crime and an Untitled Drama. Playmaker Content has one global distribution rights to professionals, an espionage drama series starring Brendan Fraser and Tom Welling, the former star of Superboy. Professionals will debut next, I think he's up, Smallville fame. Sorry, Smallville, that's Tom Welling's show. He was on for many, many years on the CW. Professionals will debut next month at the first ever virtual MIPCOM marketplace overseas. And Google is set to debut an upgraded version of Chromecast tomorrow afternoon. It's an upgraded version of its Chromecast device tomorrow afternoon. We'll be listening to that press conference and listening to any big developments on Friday's episode. And that is news notes for today. Adventure is top order to showcase two networks that are available to you on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. In our next hour, we'll showcase Sports Channel, which debuted last night through Cinedigm. But first, we're going to showcase a service that's been around for a while. It's called Edge TV, and it's all about the world of outdoor adventure. Joining us live from Los Angeles is the president of Adventure, Ian Woods. Ian, thanks for coming on.
Simon, thanks for having me on the show.
It is a pleasure. For people who don't know Edge TV, how long has it been running?
We've launched a little over a year ago, and we are an action, sports, travel, and adventure lifestyle channel.
And how did it come about? Obviously, it's that you're trying to carve a big niche with all these programming services that have popped up over the last year on smart TV sets and smart devices. What brought Edge TV and gave it birth?
So, good question, Simon. Edge TV is the result, in my case, of a decades-long passion for action sports. I worked with our founder of Edge TV, Casey Bennett, many years ago on a show called The Extremist, which was arguably the first show focusing on action sports. And over the decades, have been involved with action sports and remained super passionate about it. And it's the passion for action sports and the encompassing lifestyle that drove us to create Edge TV and make this kind of content available for the niche market that loves action sports and lifestyle.
How do you define action sports? Do you define it as sort of the UFC type of octagon, boxing, fighting, niche martial arts thing, or are we talking different type of action sports?
The other end of the spectrum, Simon. So we feature things like wingsuit flying, mountain climbing, slacklining, highlining, base jumping, that sort of things. Used to be known as extreme sports, but obviously, for obvious reasons, that phrase has sort of gone away. But action sports are, generally speaking, outdoor, man against the environment type of situations.
Mm-hmm. And how long did it take to start Edge from conception to getting on smart TV sets and smart devices?
Oh, well, as I said, decades in the action sports world and several years of content acquisition, exclusive content production. And as I said, we launched a little over a year ago. So a long time to get to a short window, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of programming is it? Is it how do you balance it out? Is it structured like a linear service, or is it hundreds or thousands of hours of programming you can get at any one time?
So it's on demand. If you go, you select what you want and when you want. So we always say, you know, whatever, wherever. We have partnered with Vimeo, and they have a very, very robust platform. They've been a fantastic partner. And that enables us to deliver it to any mobile platform. And then in terms of OTT options, we're on Roku, we're on Chromecast. As I mentioned, we're on mobile, both iOS and Android, and we're soon to be on Apple TV. And we have hundreds.
Go ahead.
And we have hundreds and hundreds of hours of programming, and we're constantly producing new exclusive content that you can find only on Edge TV.
And we're going to get into the kind of content you're producing in just a moment. We're speaking with Ian Woods. He is the president of Edge TV, started last year to join the ranks of the growing number of programming services available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, like Roku, Amazon Fire, Google Chromecast, et cetera, et cetera. And Ian joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Glad to have you with us for this 90-day edition of the program All About TV's Current and Future, coming your way on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. We're now in our second week on Amazon Music, and we're also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Simon Avedon with you live from New York. And if you have a question or a comment for Ian, ring it in, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of two episodes we're doing this week. We will be with you again on Friday at this very hour. And resetting from last week, we will have a longtime executive producer of the Daytime Talk Show Wars, and now she is executive producing Steve Harvey's Facebook Watch series, Steve on Watch. It's in its second season, just got renewed for a third. Her name is Ianthe Jones. You will meet her as our lead guest tomorrow, not to me, Friday. That's Friday. I have Anthony Jones from Steve on Watch on Facebook Watch. That's right here, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific Friday on Tomorrow We Televise. How much of the programming, Ian, is acquired versus how much your company commissions?
At this point, we're roughly 50-50 at this point. 50% is exclusive to Edge TV, and 50% is licensed. We will move toward more owned and created content over the course of the next year. But at the moment, we're in a roughly 50-50 situation.
What are some of the most favorable, or what are some of the most popular series, I should say, on your service?
Our most recent and most popular show has been a show called The Connection. It's just a really compelling, intimate story of two wingsuit flyers that meet together and climb some pretty extraordinary peaks in the very southernmost part of Corsica, and then they wingsuit fly to the neighboring island of Sardinia, where one of the two flyers grew up. In addition to that, we have an adventure lifestyle show called Bikini Destination that we've been running for several seasons now, and that continues to be popular, especially in our male demographic. Show about travel and adventure in exotic locations.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the most exotic locations that your programming covers?
We are just getting ready to release a new season of that show, and it was filmed in Bali. It was filmed in Bimini. It was filmed in Lake Powell and Tulum, Mexico. And then in terms of our action sports programming, we currently have a show under production where the filming is taking place in both the Swiss and French Alps. We'll be filming in a wind tunnel in Stockholm. And then the show will actually come to a conclusion in Bora Bora with some climbing and wingsuit flying in Bora Bora. So we really do span the globe. We pride ourselves in searching out exotic locations with interesting athletes and compelling stories.
You know, for a while in the 1960s and 70s, you had, particularly on weekends, a number of broadcast network shows or syndicated shows that dealt with the great outdoors. Shows like Outdoors with Liberty Mutual, programs like The American Sportsman, and then you had the whole lineup of animal shows, Wild Kingdom from Mutual of Omaha, Animal World, and others in that ilk. What's it like to produce outdoor adventure shows or outdoor shows these days? What kind of production quality, what kind of production technical enhancements or advancements are there to make the shows more compelling for viewers?
I would say one of the biggest advancements over those sort of early shows of outdoor adventure in any sort of environment has been point of view cameras. More precisely, GoPros. We're currently using the most recent version of GoPro, which gives us a full 6K resolution. So if you think in terms of the quality of the images that we can deliver from a point of view, so be that on the athlete as he wingsuits flies, or as he deploys the parachute at the end, or if we're doing underwater segments, we can take you underwater as if you're there within this incredible resolution. In addition to that, we use drones a lot, which has been a huge boon to adventure sports, and the idea to be able to cover it from the bird's eye view once again in 4K and 6K resolution, that's been a real transformation for ourselves and for, I would say, any and all production companies that are pursuing action sports programming.
What kind of marketplace is there for outdoor programming? Where do you find these series creators, filmmakers, video makers to do the kind of programming you want to showcase?
We live in an era where there's so much content that if you can identify a niche market the way we have with Edge TV, I think it really gives you an opportunity to provide programming to an underserved market. And in terms of collaborating, we live in the golden age of collaborating with influencers who have a way through co-productions with ourselves to go and film adventures that they wouldn't be able to do on their own. And from our aspect to executive produce these contributors is a real privilege and a pleasure as well. And it enables us to really extend our reach to truly global programming.
Do you use influencers who have made a reputation on social media, whether it's YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok?
We do to a certain extent. What we're always looking for, Simon, is up-and-coming athletes and filmmakers. So before they've been discovered, which is, I believe, the secret to establishing a long-term relationship with both the athletes, the influencers, and independent producers. I'll give you an example. Years ago, I worked on a ski tour with a skier pipe athlete, Colby West. Extremely gifted, won our ski tour hands down as a kid, 18, and now 6-7 years later, he's become one of our influencers, and we currently have a series that's being shot now where he's building and driving a drift car. So a real crossover from a long-term relationship with an individual athlete that enables us to deliver the kind of programming that others can't.
You mentioned two aspects of your network, action sports as well as outdoor adventure, but you also have lifestyle shows. What kind of lifestyle?
We have a lifestyle show called Liquid Edge, which gets you out in terms of anything that happens on the water. So if you're a whitewater kayaker, great. If you're a big wave surfer, great. It gives you the ability to experience a wide variety of lifestyles within a given sport. We have another show that we created, and we're about to go into another season's production called Winging It, the story of a young couple who are base jumpers and travel the globe base jumping, either from bridges or structures, occasionally from the odd antenna. But it also deals with their life on the road and the trials and tribulations of being one of these lifestyle athletes who travel for not only their lifestyle, but for their profession, if you will.
Mm-hmm. How do viewers get the network? Is it they have to pay a fee, a monthly fee, an annual fee to get the channel, or is it free with advertising support?
No, it's a subscription channel at the moment, and you can find us on Roku. We have apps for both iPhone and Android. You can also find us on Chromecast. And if you're a keen observer, you'll see on occasion we're running promotions that give you a couple of free weeks and then a discounted intro into your first month of subscription. So you don't have to deal with ads. And as I said, we're on demand, so you can go and search out what you like. We'll obviously follow your interests and recommend things to you and introduce you, hopefully, to new sports and new lifestyles that you may find interesting and entertaining.
Edge TV is now in year two of existence on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, including Roku, Google Chromecast, which, by the way, will make a big announcement tomorrow, announcing a brand new upgrade to that device and other places as well. We're speaking with the president of Edge TV, Ian Woods, joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. And happy you are along for the ride with us as well. Simon, I'm with you live from New York. 73 degrees at the top of the hour, and we invite you to make those phone calls and chat room action happen. 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name's Ben Spee, is still in Bart Chatham. Coming up, our next half hour, we've got our classic trivia question segment. We'll give you the answer to the question we posed over the last 2 weeks. It's a brand new question, and for the first time in a while, we have three prizes in play, including the brand new book that we showcased earlier this month from former Comedy Central executive Art Bell called Constant Comedy. So get ready. We're going to pose that question for you in our next half hour. And coming up in our final half hour, we're learning something we haven't done in a while. Introduce a brand new segment called Reboot This. And I think you'll find a very interesting segment, so stay tuned for that as well. You know, Ian, back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, we had this amazing wave of scripted adventure programming. You know, shows like Sea Hunt, Whirly Birds, Ripcord, also Underwater Adventure, all sorts of shows with the Man of the Challenge, all sorts of Man Against the Elements kind of play. And we also had sort of the man and animal friendship type of dramas. Lassie, General Ben, The Littlest Hobo, Run Joe Run, et cetera, et cetera. As HTV goes forward, year two and beyond, do you see the possibility of perhaps getting into scripted television, given that we have really seen shows dealing with the outdoors, adventure, man, friendship with animals in a very long time, in a big way?
Another good question, Simon. At the moment, we don't have plans for that. We've certainly discussed it in-house as we talk about the development of different athletes and influencers. Is that the natural progression? And it may well be, as you said, it certainly had a heyday quite a long time ago in the early days of television. And it may well happen again. As I said, we're discussing it, but we don't have any scripted shows in development at the time.
Yeah, I would say. Do you run across producers who approach your network with scripted pilots or scripted ideas?
Yes, we would certainly entertain that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really amazing that again we had this heyday in the 50s and 60s of this kind of programming, and we haven't really had it in a major way ever since. You know, Ivan Tors was the man behind shows like Flipper and Sea Hunt and Primus and General Ben and so forth. And we really haven't had an Ivan Tors entrepreneur in ever since the 70s. So maybe there's an opportunity here for Edge to do it. We'll see. Where do you see Edge TV going in the years ahead?
We will continue to serve our niche market, the action sports enthusiasts, if you will. But one thing that we have and are developing and will continue to develop, of course, is data on what our viewers like. And ultimately, our job is to deliver what they want to see more of. For example, if wingsuit flying continues to be popular, we will continue to produce epic wingsuit flying programming. If we discover that there's a growing interest in something that's perhaps not as compelling as that visually, say, be it backpacking, if we find that there's an audience for that, we'll produce what our audience is interested in. I know that's sort of a radical departure from what most producers will tell you, that they'll produce and the people will watch, which is true to a certain extent. But our market is millennial and Gen Z males, and we want to react to what they want. We want to deliver the kind of programming they're looking for.
What about things like fishing or things, sports of that name? You know, fishing seems to have a little bit of a revival lately. The Bassmasters on ESPN are the places. There are actually now at least one or two channels that are devoted to fishing, both fishing as for amateurs, but also fishing as a competition. And what about esports? Do you see a role for esports in the area of outdoor adventure?
Yes. Esports, obviously a rapidly growing area right now. We are developing a sim racing series, so I see the future of esports continuing to grow, and we will eventually have esports programming on Edge because that really suits the appetite of our audience. Mm-hmm. in regards to fishing. I'm a fly fisherman, and I would dearly love to do a show on fly fishing, but for the moment, we're not going to be pursuing fishing and hunting shows. If in a show there is a lifestyle segment about fishing, it would be very much sort of the enthusiast stepping out of, say, a day of wingsuit climb to try fishing, but very much from the enthusiast viewpoint rather than professional fishermen and fishing tournaments.
What about things like water skiing or sort of Echo Challenge type events? Echo Challenge, which Mark Burnett invented, which was really the forerunner of the unscripted competitions like Survivor, Amazing Race, and so on, was just revived, and we had the executive producer on sometime back for that series. And any possibility of maybe trying things like that, sort of like, people against the elements?
Yes, that's definitely in our scope, and we have a couple of projects in mind that are sort of man against the environment, but on a much smaller scale, much more intimate, more of an individual's struggles with achieving their goals. So if you need to hike for 3 days to get to a peak from which you might wingsuit fly, the challenges therein would be who can do it the best. But as I said, not on a traditional competition basis, but just documenting the struggles of individual athletes as they pursue the same goal.
By the way, in the conversation I'm getting, that one of the things you like to do with the network is to try to do shows where you sort of bring the experience personally to, let's say, a husband and wife couple or a particular individual, and how they deal with the sport or how they deal with the lifestyle, how they deal with, living their life as much more in the outdoors than the indoors.
Yes, and that's part of our devotion to true storytelling, telling the whole story and not just giving you a visual highlights of a jump or something. What's it like to drive for 3 days from British Columbia all the way to Twin Falls, Idaho, and wait for the perfect conditions to jump off the bridge there? And what are the challenges, rather than just showing the jump and the fist pumping when they land? We really feel that helps you understand the characters, become more invested and involved with them, and ultimately care about the show and really be interested in what their next adventure might be. We particularly like winging it because, as I said, it's a now husband and wife combo, Suze and Braden Dean, and they're very compelling people that make you really think about what they're doing. They're not, if you will, daredevils or thrill seekers. They're, very meticulous and really scientific about their pursuit of this high adrenaline passion of base jumping.
HTV, now in its second season, coming your way through smart TV sets and smart TV devices. So if you have an app, if you have Amazon Fire TV, Roku, Google Chromecast, et cetera, chances are HTV is part of that programming lineup, and it'll be on smart TV sets and other devices hopefully sooner than later. More details about the service online, here's where you go, www.edgetv.com. www.edgetv.com. Ian Woods, the president of the network, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on marking your first anniversary. Hopefully many, many more years to come, and it's been a delight to have you on the program.
A real pleasure, Simon. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Ian. All the greatest. Take care. Have a super rest of your week.
You as well. Thank you.
Ian Woods, the president of HTV, joining us live from Los Angeles. More tomorrow to televise after this word from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you love science fiction, how about taking the opportunity to listen to one of the great science fiction works of all time, Frank Herbert's classic Dune. Well, that audiobook version and more can be yours right now if you go to a one-month trial of Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. Over 200,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, whatever you're hearing us on right now, at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, and iHeartRadio. And get this. If you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook, you get health and wellness material for a limited time, and that one-month trial. But try this on. If you're already an Amazon Prime customer, you have two audiobooks coming your way with that one-month trial. And you can also choose from the growing collection of Audible Originals. It's really flying. It's everything from original audio productions from all sorts of sources, best of Broadway, off-Broadway and regional theater, and great Wonder Woman and Wonder Man performances. So how about making this week the time you discover how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world? For that one or two free audio books, the one-month trial, health and wellness material, and more, it's audibletrial.com/televised. Coming up in our next half hour, our new classic trivia question of the week and the answer to the old one. Plus, what about this organization called Representation Counts? How is it trying to expand diversity on television? We will find out live from Ontario, Canada, when we meet up with founder Shireen Innes. That's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio in the galaxy. It's www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tunerradio.com. Together, reaching over 50 million customers all around the globe and growing. Remember, Blog Talk Radio is your home for Kings in the Morning. It's the popular talk variety show with Jay King and crew. Catch it every weekday, including tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, Kings in the Morning, right here on blogtalkradio.com. And remember, that's BTR speaker available to you 24/7 at youtube.com. Welcome back to the Mommy Televised, second half hour of our 90th edition, last one of September 2020. Donna Applebaum with you live from New York. Delighted to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. You were on Monday. We were not because of the Yom Kippur holiday. To all those of you that celebrated that holiday, congratulations on a safe and easy fast, and all the best for a wonderful new year. Wonderful guests coming right over the next hour, and of course, we invite you to be in the conversation. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 0489. Our good friend Spence B is still aboard in the room. You'll find that room at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. My next guest is the founder of an organization that, like a number of others, is trying to expand diversity on television. It's called Representation Counts. And joining us live from Ontario, Canada, is its founder and chief executive, Shireen Innes. Shireen, welcome aboard.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure, Shireen. When it comes to television, what is your organization out to do?
So when it comes to television, where our organization usually... Sorry?
Go ahead.
So what our organization targets for these particular needs is that we go in and we try to raise awareness with representation and how that contributes to expanding diversity.
Mm-hmm. How did your organization get started? How long has it been running for?
Okay, so Representation Counts was something that I was already kind of thinking about and tinkering for over a year. I was involved in another company prior to this that I didn't officially launch until about April of 2020, so right before the anti-racism movements and revolution sort of began.
Mm-hmm. And how fast has it grown over the time it's been in business?
So there's definitely a lot of demand for representation standards across many industries, and as a result of that, we've been receiving on average about 115 stories a day via email, and we're growing at about 6% a week over week. So we're projecting growth in terms of stories and voices being heard over the year to be well over the thousands.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to television, what is the rate of progress you are seeing in this medium compared to other entertainment media, movies, books, theater, performing arts, et cetera?
So I would say when it comes to television, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. I think that there is a lot more awareness and a lot more conversation happening. But in terms of actual change being enforced, we really aren't seeing it as much as we are even movie. And the only reason I say that is Black Panther is the perfect example. to how, like, there is still that lag in television in general with representation, diversity, inclusion, equality being a priority, because up until this point, really the only shows that I see that really present a lot of diversity are like Shonda Rhimes for Grey's Anatomy, which actually raises a perfect argument of why representation at an executive level can translate into more representation throughout TV or inspire other people in television to be more inclusive.
Shereen, what would you say to people either in or out of television or to TV viewers who will say, you know, shouldn't we acknowledge the fact that particularly this year we have seen a lot of advancement in the area of diversity on television, whether it is the number of people of color and women of color that have launched their own production companies, the number of people of color and women of color who have gotten program development deals, series creators with Netflix or NBC or ABC or Hulu or Amazon or Warner Media, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, or executives that have become major players in TV, like Bija Bajan becoming the head of global TV for Netflix, or Paulina Ibike, a long time with Showtime and NBC Universal, now the head of NBC Universal's content unit, which includes Universal Television, UCP of the content productions, and an unscripted unit as well. And more recently, the news that the Viacom CBS is going to make 100 made-for-TV movies over the next year, 50 of them in a movie-a-week fraction for Paramount Network, others for MTV and Comedy Central, and then under a new first-time director initiative program, half of these movies are going to be directed by women and people of color, working in particular with people of color like Salma Hayek, America Ferrari, John Luziamo, Courtney B. Vance, who have now their own production companies, and they'll serve as mentors to these first-time directors.
Yeah, so what I would say is right now, with all of that stuff, even though it all sounds so great, I do think that there still needs to be awareness. I think a lot of things regarding this particular action and everything that you mentioned, there's a lot of tokenism that immediately happens, right? And with tokenism, it's not always the solution to kind of the pains of the BIPOC and the LGBTQ2+ community. And so I really think that the way a lot of executives that go about having this inclusion standard, they really look at it as if, like, okay, we're in school, this education, we're going to academic everything and things in theory, and we have this goal, but how they go about actioning those goals is really what's going to count for people in the BIPOC community as well as LGBTQ2. And this is exactly the reason why there has been such a goal and such an outstanding number of people stand up and raise their voices when it comes to this, that, hey, this authentic kind of puzzle piece is missing when it comes to how recruitment or how the objectives are being set. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that there is still this veil of privilege and this veil of patterns that kind of happens. And that's what I mean is they tokenize one individual and now they need everything. A perfect example of this is, you know, Priyanka Chopra. And it's not always representative when you see the same person for the same role when it comes to somebody being in BIPOC, and that's kind of, I think, where we were. And that's where a lot of people in these communities stand up and say, you know, like, if there's a room with unknown actors and then there's, like, Priyanka Chopra, you're better off picking somebody and giving them a chance that's unknown versus somebody that already has that brand, because you're just tokenizing at that point otherwise if you don't kind of elect other people into your movie or your show. And that's kind of what I worry about or even bring to the attention of executives in this space.
Well, how does the tokenism manifest itself? Is it one specific way, or are there a bunch of ways that pop up depending on which pathway of television or entertainment you're dealing with?
Sorry, I didn't hear the earlier part.
I was saying, because you mentioned tokenism just now, how does tokenism manifest itself? How does it show up for you in a particular way? Does it show up in one particular way or one universal way, or does it show up in a bunch of different ways depending on the level that you're dealing with in television, whether it is the network level, the studio level, the production company level, the show level, the talent level, et cetera, the agent level, et cetera?
You know, I think it manifests itself like a seed. It really starts in one place and kind of just grows and spews out everywhere else. And look, tokenism can be a great thing. You know, like, tokenism has brought about a lot of great people. But I also think that, you know, with tokenism, sometimes you try to use that same person, just using an example, a person of color, let's say that is Black. In one role, they performed outstandingly. But then now you've taken that same person, you think, okay, this is the person we're going to use, believing how small the community is, and with producers or with executives, they're going to be like, okay, well, I'm going to tap on their shoulder because elitism is also an issue that ties into all of this. And now you're going to use the same person in other roles that otherwise wasn't perfect or would fit for that role or qualified. And so, sure, they would have outperformed in one video or, like, one show or one movie or whatever, but now you put them somewhere else and they completely go off the rails because they weren't the perfect fit for that role or even qualified. And so now they carry a bad reputation for the entire aesthetic of people who look like that. Right? So that's when tokenism fails. And so that's where I see, like, tokenism can manifest itself quite positively, really create somebody who's well-branded, well-rounded, and extremely, or that same tokenism can actually put someone in a BIPOC community really at a disadvantage because the system was set up against that one person who was token to begin with.
We are speaking with Shireen Annis. She is the head of Representation Counts, which is one of the diversity organizations out to really transform where diversity is in the world of entertainment and specifically television. And she's with us live from Ontario, Canada this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom Hamlin with you live from New York. Good to have you with us. 73 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. Want to welcome Vorkalite 3 into our chat room. Simon Apple 04 by name. And we want to hear from you if you're in our chat room. And by the way, hello, room. Thank you, Vorkalite, for that. So if you have a question or comment, those of you in the room, put it in the room. And that is Simon Apple 04 by name at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com. So give us a call, 646-652-2906. Remember that number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And once again, coming up on our show Friday, we'll have Nancy Jones. She's the executive producer with Steve Harvey of Steve on Watch, his Facebook Watch show, now in its second season there. Don't forget Facebook Watch is available on smart TV sets and smart devices, including Facebook's own Portal TV, which you may hear an upgrade from sometime this autumn. And Steve on Watch, by the way, just got the go-ahead for year 3. And Nancy Jones, the executive producer, will join us. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Shireen, all along, when we have covered diversity on television, we have said that there's no one silver bullet for accomplishing diversity on television. And we get that there's a goal, which is obviously that TV has to reflect the fact that sooner or later, the majority of people in this country are going to be multicultural, multiracial, et cetera, et cetera. And we've also said there's no one silver bullet because you have to approach this on a lot of levels. Like I said, the studio level, the network level, the production level, the show level, the talent level, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When you and your colleagues are dealing with television, are you concentrating on a specific level of television or area of television, or are you going after as many levels as possible?
Because it's a space of diversity and equality, we really are trying to expand ourselves in multiple verticals, right? And that includes have like the approach. So approach, we will target executives specifically, core decision-makers and key recruiters, all that, right? Approach, what you get is at the end of the final impact when it comes to recruitment, everything, right? But we've got the representation council. When we're in a setting of consulting, is we match the top down, because traditionally has that divide between actually amplifying impact and bottom up. Do is we go out, study the market, we go and talk to people. Like, since I've gone door to door, been ran, you know, California or in New York. Some people's shoulders was allowed to find you. Literally gotten really down, spoken to people about how they feel as consumers about representing what they're demanding. Because at the end of the day, you vote what they're doing. And then we relate that that information, communicate it, and match it. Like, hey, what the market wants. This is what the market wants. And if you can get this representation, your for any industry, product or service is going to perform better if you can take these key metrics into your and maybe recruit have that way.
Do you work with individuals or individual production companies or individual businesses in television to, you know, to advance what they're doing? And if so, can you give us a name or two that you work with?
I cannot disclose that because often we are very trusted because of our confidentiality. A lot of this can be politicized very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. We do work with much everyone.
Mm-hmm.
As well.
One of the arenas that has really surged, even with this pandemic, has been this incredible new variety of programming services distributed through smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multicast channels. We just had Edge TV on. We're going to have Shorts Channel on right after you, which, by the way, also represents a lot of thousands of filmmakers around the world, including many of color and women.
Mm-hmm.
And we are seeing a lot of these new networks are from independent entrepreneurs. Some of them, by the way, are from are women and people of color. Either trying to do general audience services or do services specifically aimed at African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Are you working with anybody in that field? And what do you think about the fact that we are now seeing this incredible variety of programming services largely from new independent players, not from the Viacom, CBS's, the Warner Media's, or the NBC Universal, Comcast, or Disney's of the world?
Right. So, like I said earlier, it is really something that boils down to confidentiality. It's really up to the people we're working with to disclose that they're working with us. And at that point, that would be kind of an invitation for me to speak on that. It's just what makes us professional. But I will say that, like, absolutely, we're always our door is always open to work with a very diverse range of people. I mean, we have our services offered to people in antitrust, politicians, like really anybody and everybody. And so it could even be startups or like individuals who just want to be more educated or bettered about diversity and inclusion. But I will also add to, just as like a general point, what I do recognize as well, and what we tell those people that when we do work with them is when you say BIPOC and women, it really is not the best way to approach including women, because in the BIPOC community there are women as well. And so really I think when we talk about women, we're talking about feminism. So maybe a better verbiage use in the BIPOC and feminist community, because BIPOC do carry women of color, you know?
Mm-hmm. Do you work with individual series, TV series at all?
Not at this moment, but again, we are very open to people with TV series.
Mm-hmm. What about encouraging women and people of color to get involved in technologies such as interactive television or the ability to order products and services or to do things like video chat, telemedicine, things like that that are starting to happen in TV?
Yeah, no, of course. I think that even with whatever like technological and digital tools that are available, it really does also boil down to having your reputation there by having your own brand. That's kind of the fire that has been distributed to people and to kind of amplify their talent or skill or profession. And so I think that it is an excellent thing that we're seeing when it comes to these technical advances occurring within this industry. And I do think that with that, there will be more inclusion and representation as long as there is that education and awareness at an executive level for more people in the BIPOC and feminist community to join that.
We are talking about an organization called Representation Counts, and its leader is Shireen Anus. And she joins us live from Ontario, Canada this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Sign out, going to be live from New York. Delighted to have you with us. Stay tuned, it's coming up near the top of the hour. We have our brand new classic trivia question. We'll give you the answer to our current question as well. And if you know the answer, we have not one, not two, but three prizes in play, including the brand new book about the making of Comedy Central from Art Bell, the senior vice president, former senior vice president of the network, who was with us on our program last week. And if you have a question or comment or remaining moments, by the way, with Shireen, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room. Simon Appleger by name. And by the way, Barbara Bites 3, who's in our room, has a suggestion for you, and that is that there should be more massive competition, more new channels. As he says in our chat room, more channels, the better, and that something good will pop up and hit the bullseye.
Yes. I agree with that. And sorry, I can't really hear you that well. That was a question in the chat room. You were saying that more channels that are bullseye.
Right. Vogel by 3 in our chat room was commenting on the fact that there should be more massive competition in the field of television, and that would open the door for diversity. And he says something good will hit the bullseye. The more channels you have, the better.
Exactly, and I fully agree with that. You know, right now what we are seeing in Hollywood is a lot of monopoly, and this comment is absolutely relevant, I think, is very disruptive, and I think that's exactly what we need. The more there, not to get diversity to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm. Are you and your colleagues doing this with a sense of optimism that, you know, we're making progress and we're going to get there, as opposed to sort of taking a negative attitude that we really have to, like, fight mm-hmm. to get every step we can?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We're always extremely positive and optimistic about it, just because you kind of have to be, right? Like, when it comes to this type of highly emotionally charged conversation, there's nothing but positivity to come if you maintain that environment. And so I think that, you know, a lot of the times when it comes to people who are trying to make a change and haven't been able to in the past, it really comes down not to ignorance, but to education. So that's the positivity that we have that we can offer that kind of as well by having education to make diversity and inclusion a priority.
Mm-hmm. I want to give you one more comment in our chat room for Vogel by 3, who remembers that, you know, way back when, he and his family watched Roots, which was one of the great groundbreaking shows in television on ABC, put together, you know, based on the great book by Alex Haley, put together by one of the great executive producers and entrepreneurs in the history of television, David Wolper, with his partner Stan Margulies for Warner Brothers. And he says that that sort of thing, that ability to watch television of that kind, it showcases the experiences of people of color and really the whole rainbow of humanity with the entire family hasn't happened in years. Is that something you hope that could happen, is that we could see more shows that deal with the experience of the people of color that are inclusion with the family? For example, one show I know of this year that was sensational, which did that for Vogel by 3's knowledge, is Little America, the Apple TV Plus anthology series that every episode dealt with a little small part of the immigrant experience, and one that I think people could identify with and families could identify with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So to that I would speak to, yes, absolutely. Seeing more experiences can absolutely change the narrative and mindset of people who are watching, right? But I also think that what we have to be mindful of, what I think a lot of BIPOC communities have an issue with, is the breadth of experiences that they choose to select as a story to project to the world. Because all BIPOC members don't come in part, right? We're not all underserved. There's a lot of BIPOC excellence. And so that's where I think that whatever person is bringing that to life story, they need to understand that, you know, stop just bringing negative stories that are often exaggerated. And, like, sure, some of them are absolutely true or based on a true story, but I think that there needs to be more variety in the types of experiences that is being projected to people at scale, and that should include like BIPOC excellence.
Before you go, Shireen, do you work with other organizations and trade groups that also are out to expand diversity, or do you feel you get more accomplished by doing things on your own?
So absolutely. We work a lot better in connecting with people, right? Like, the more people that you have on the idea or the movement wagon wanting to move mountains and bring meaningful change when it comes to being more inclusive and equal and diverse and having representation at tables, that's when you get impact done. Like, I think solely as a single voice, you can begin the conversation for change. But when it comes to actioning change, you need a partnership and you need a group of people to bring that change to life, right? And so it's never an individual initiative. It's always something that's cumulative and very united and harmonious, right? Like, you have to be very driven together and not just individual to bring that change. Usually one person can keep the glue together, but it really is something that needs a lot of people at the table.
Mm-hmm. The name of the organization is Representation Counts. If you want to find out more about what it does, not only in the world of TV, expanding diversity on and off the camera, but also in other aspects of entertainment, here's where you go online. It's representationcounts.com. That's representationcounts.com. Check it out. Very interesting website, and they're up to a lot of things when it comes to expanding diversity, which is something that, frankly, we all want. And Bumblebite3, by the way, thank you for your thoughts over the course of our conversation with Shireen. Shireen, thank you again for being on. All the very best to the organization. Stay in touch with us on your progress, and maybe we'll have you back soon. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Likewise. Take care.
You too. All the greatest. Shireen is joining us live from Ontario, Canada, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Now it's time for our classic trivia segment, and before we get to our brand-new question, we got to finish up some business with our current question that we've offered over the last 2 weeks. Unfortunately, nobody got the answer, so at the moment, nobody won Becoming Ginger Rogers, the wonderful book about how ballroom dancing made me a happier woman, better partner, and smarter chief executive officer by Patrice Tanaka, published by Barbella Books, and the trio of episodes of Fish Tank Kings from Nat Geo Wild. The question was, what comedy series won the first Emmy Award for Best Comedy Series in 1951? We told you that the answer was not I Love Lucy. That was probably the natural answer, and it was nominated that year. And we also told you that the winner was a very famous comedian who also was a very famous pantomimist and clown. The answer? Red Skelton. The Red Skelton Show. That's right. The Red Skelton Show, which many people remember from the 60s as an hour-long variety show on CBS, was originally a sketch comedy half hour on broadcast television. It was on NBC, sponsored by Tide. And by the way, you can see those episodes on YouTube now. So once again, the answer to our question, The Red Skelton Show was the first comedy series to win Best Comedy Series, that Emmy Award, back in 1951. And by the way, yes, sketch comedy and situation comedy was included in the same category at that time. Well, let's try again with a brand new question, and we're throwing in a third prize. And that third prize, we talked about last week, we had Art Bell, the former Comedy Central senior executive there. It's a brand new book, Constant Comedy, about the making of that network. It's available through Amazon.com, Books A Million, and other places. But right now, we have a chance to win it with this question. Earlier this month, Entertainment Tonight marked its 40th anniversary on the air. It, of course, is the foundation show for entertainment news coverage. It really set the mold. It also was one of the first early evening television programs to use satellite to distribute the show same day to its local station affiliates from Paramount Television. Well, here's the question. Entertainment Tonight started with three co-hosts. Name two of them. Name two of the three original hosts of Entertainment Tonight. And if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Make sure you include your name and your mailing address. If you're first with the correct answer, you will win Becoming Ginger Rogers, the constant comedy book from Mark Bell, and the trio of episodes of Fish Tank Kings from Nat Geo Wild. Once again, the question, name two of the three original hosts of Entertainment Tonight, which marked its 40th anniversary on the air earlier this month. Congratulations to E.T., Kevin Frazier and crew, the current crew for all they've done. And yes, that Michael Martin song, da-da-da-da-da-da, is still around and it's still kicking. Once again, name two of the original three Entertainment Tonight hosts. And if you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. And if we don't get an answer by the end today, we'll post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. That's the UBCSimonTWBT. And by the way, I see that in our chat room, Bubble by 3, who's been in the room for quite a while, was not happy about the fact that the Honeymooners did not win a Best Comedy Series Emmy. However, it did win for its performances by Art Carney and Audrey Meadows. Not only, I think, for the series, but also for the Jackie Gleason show that preceded and followed it in terms of showcasing original Honeymooners sketches. So thanks to the Vocal Bites for that thought about the Honeymooners. Yes, I have to think, by the way, for me, the Honeymooners is the best TV comedy ever made, or one of the best. I still see it often, and I'm still laughing myself silly at the great dialogue, the great scripts, and the great performances of Jackie Gleason, Art Carney, Joyce Randolph, and Audrey Meadows of that show. So let's see if we get a winner of our current classic TV question. And again, in order to win, you got to be in, so do so, and all the very best. When we come back, we're going to kick off a new feature called Reboot This. But first, our second Spotlight channel available on smart TV sets and smart devices started last week. It's called Short Channel. And Paige Williams will talk about it live from Montana at the top of the hour for web identification. Once again, you're listening to www.blogtalkradio.com, simulcasting with speaker.com, and TuneIn Radio with TuneIn.com. Together, reach over 50 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, TuneIn Radio is your home for the coronavirus news channel. Check it out. 24/7 reporting from all around the globe about this pandemic, plus podcasts, other original material as well. It's the coronavirus news channel. Stay in touch and stay informed. And that, of course, is happening 24/7. TuneIn Radio at TuneIn.com. Welcome back to the final half hour of Tomorrow Televised for this September 29th, 2020. Welcome to joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Avon with you live from wherever you are. We're only with you Mondays and Fridays because of Yom Kippur yesterday. We weren't with you yesterday, so we're back again today. 73 degrees at the top of the hour here in New York. We had a bit of showers earlier today. We're expecting a lot more and some overnight drenching of rain between now and Wednesday morning. And if you have some questions or thoughts for our next guest, well, use that phone, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04AM. Spence B is in the room, Mobile by 3 is in the room, and we'd love to have you join them as well. Don't forget that our chat room, SimonApple04, is at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. In our first half hour, an hour ago, we showcased Edge TV, now in its second year on smart TV sets and smart TV devices. Right now, we're going to showcase a service that's now in its second week, Shorts Channel, distributed by Cinedigm, which we've already had back in August on our show. And joining us live to talk about what Shorts Channel is up to through a company called Autop is its president or chief executive officer and founder, joining us live from Missoula, Montana, Paige Williams. Hi, Paige.
Hello, how are you?
Paige, very fine, thank you. How is the weather and everything up in Montana, by the way, your neck of the woods?
Oh, it's absolutely gorgeous, blue skies, the smoke has cleared out, and it's a gorgeous fall day.
Good to hear. Well, you're in week two of Shorts Channel. What's been the reaction to week one?
Hey, it's been really great. We appreciate this time spent with you. We're out shopping the channel and getting it up across connected TVs and streaming services, and we're excited about the future of engaging audiences with short films.
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, thank you. We're delighted to have you aboard, and I want to thank, by the way, the folks at Cinedigm for allowing us to get you aboard here, too. How is your service different from Shorts HD, which is another channel that also carries short subjects?
Yeah, so we are a global community of filmmakers from around the world. So you're going to find a lot of different genres of different types of films from global filmmakers that you would, you know, see at your local film festival and then have a hard time finding again. So we like to promote diverse filmmakers and diverse content across multiple genres. And it's really easy for a filmmaker to find us and to submit their films. And then the audience and the jury vote for their favorites. And those favorites are the ones that end up streaming on our Shorts channel. So we've really democratized entertainment and the ability to be able to knock out the middleman and let filmmakers reach audiences.
How many filmmakers does your company Autop represent, and how many take part in these efforts to pick what goes on Shorts channel?
Yeah, sure. So we have a community of about 75,000 global filmmakers. And other people come to our site to watch films and vote on films and engage with the content, and that's about 250,000 members. And then all of those people reach about 200 million users, and of those, we have about 12,000 films that can be accessed through Shorts Channel in our film library.
Are the shorts arranged by category, fiction, nonfiction, or arranged by genre in the case of fiction? Science
yes.
fiction, comedy,
mm-hmm.
drama, romance, family, et cetera.
Yes, 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 and yes. We have animation, documentary, live action, love films, urban films, green films, wildlife films, comedies, LGBTQ, made by diverse filmmakers, et cetera. So it's a very we aren't genre specific. We have great films in all categories.
How long has this service been in the works for? And what did finally decide? What did you finally decide? Let's do this.
Yeah. So I started the company in 2013 because I'm a filmmaker by trade, and I saw the need to bring the film festival experience online and connect filmmakers to opportunities and brands. And so we started the company, and it has been a web-based platform. And now with this partnership with Cinedigm, we're just getting into, okay, let's take the best films from our platform and create a shorts channel and get it across different OTT channels.
Is the service ad supported, or do people using it have to pay a fee, either a monthly or an annual fee?
Yeah. So the shorts channel that we're getting out across OTT is AVOD. It's ad supported. And we are veering away from subscription at this point, but it may be in our future. But I think with shorts channels, it's a really good idea to just keep it ad supported for the time being.
Well, speaking of Paige Williams, she is the founder and the chief executive of Autopop. That's the company behind one of the newest smart TV programming services. It's called Shorts Channel. It's being distributed by Cinedigm, which is a company that is really rocking and rolling when it comes to distributing smart TV programming services on sets or on devices such as Roku, Amazon Fire, and Stack. And if you have Roku, you can now get Shorts Channel with other smart TV set and gadgets to come not far down the road. Paige joins live from Missoula, Montana this half hour on Tomorrow We Tell Live. We want to hear from you. What do you think about this kind of a channel? And we have some other things to talk to Paige about. We will do so as the conversation unfolds. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04, my name. And coming up before the bottom of the hour, we will launch a brand new feature on this program called Reboot This. It's about TV shows that didn't have a very long life that we think should come back in this era of rebooting shows, like From One Day at a Time, Kung Fu, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And our first one is a game that had a very short life in the United States, but a very long life in England. Stay tuned for that. That's coming up near the bottom of the hour. Paige, what are some of the early highlights, highlights of the service?
Well, you know, we have a lot of great short films that are award winners. They've won film festivals, they've won Emmys, they've been on other channels, and so now we're bringing all the best content together. So we just ran a campaign on our platform that asked female filmmakers in the United States to create a two-minute film inspired by sheltering in place. In 1 week, we got over 500 entries, and those were juried down to the best of the best, and one of them even included our very own Bryan Cranston, and that film is on our channel, as well as some other hot films with talent like Matt Damon and Clea DuVall. So there's a lot for everyone, including some names that are very recognizable in today's world of content.
Mm-hmm. Robo Vice 3 is in our chat room. He's been with us for the last half hour or so, and he says that one of the things he misses most of all from television, and it really isn't stupid. This person may think it is, but it really is not, is the local midnight horror movie host with their crazy local commercials. And I remember those days of Zachary and Vampira and Elvira, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, doing those films. And we mentioned in our news notes that, in fact, today, another brand new Cinedigm network just launched called Play Disgusting. We hope you have, by the way, the people from that service on during our October shows. But do you do a lot of creepy stuff on your service? Do you find a lot of your filmmakers do horror or do science fiction? And that
oh,
kind of
my
thing?
Gosh, yeah. Yeah, horror is one of our strongest genres. Thanks for bringing it up, especially since we're looking at October. And so all month long we have, it's year-round really, but we're going to have late-night horror and late-night not-for-kids animation. And those two blocks of screenings go together. And the horror films that we have on our platform, like Kooky and Dota and The Balloon, are really fun. And we're going to be highlighting those not only on our screening them on our channel, but also on our social media and all through the month of October.
Mm-hmm. What about family fare? Both scripted and unscripted films that are suitable for family audiences.
Yeah. So in the mornings, we shift to a more family-friendly audience. And so we have a lot of kids animation programming, as well as inspiring films and faith and spirituality, and even a little business mixed into there. So stories about cool small businesses around the world and how they are changing their communities. So there's a little bit of everything for family. Those are earlier in the day, and then we move into more dramatic and comedy and afternoon programming with some series, et cetera, and it just goes from there.
What are you learning early on, and maybe only a week in, about A, the audience for your service, and B, their likes, about what short
yeah.
subject or type of source do they gravitate to?
Yeah. So everybody loves comedy, and our other three hot ones are adventure, animation, and horror, like you mentioned. And so those are the ones that perform the most on our site. Our audience is pretty down the road, middle. It's 18 to 34-year-olds primarily, and it's a diverse audience. It crosses multiple demographics. It's about 50-50 male-female that we're seeing, and engagement from all places around the country and the world, really.
Mm-hmm. Since the channel started, are you getting a bump in terms of people submitting short subjects to you, whether it's from well-known filmmakers
mm-hmm.
to the independents to the people that, you know, trying to break into the art?
Yeah. So we open campaigns on our platform and accept films in all different categories. So, for example, we just opened the Holiday Film Festival, and people can submit their holiday films. And then we will review those and pick the best of those and distribute them on our channels across all the multiple platforms. Another hot topic right now that we're about to crowdsource some new content and open a campaign for is around social, political, and the election season, and those will premiere on our Flipboard channel as well as on our platform.
It sounds like one of the things that you want to do, Paige, with this service is to get the audience involved as much as possible in terms of giving them sort of a big say in what gets presented.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, our company used to be called the Audience Awards. So my films would go to film festivals, and they would win the audience awards. And then I was trying to figure out how to bring this experience online. And I was like, well, we could just do public voting. And so we started the company and rolled with that. And what we found is that the audience vote really helps show what people resonate with. And then the jury takes the audience vote into consideration and picks the ones that are the best films with the audience vote in mind. And so we love engaging people's fans and followers, as well as new audiences, and introducing them to new content and new filmmakers, and then providing another portal through our Shorts channel to showcase the very best of the best of the content that's on our site.
Mm-hmm. What percent of Shorts channel is fairly recent material, let's say in the last 5 years, and how much of it is classic stuff, let's say classic short subjects?
What do you mean? By classic?
Material that may have been made like over the last, let's say, 10 to 20 years. Or, for example, trying to bring the classic short subject series like Our Gang, The Little Rascals, Crime Does Not Pay, the Pete Smith Specialty.
Yeah.
The classic movies has made a great deal about doing what they call extras, which are really the great short subject catalog of by MGM and RKO.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Right now, our content is crowdsourced for independent filmmakers who are working in the business right now. It's not based on publisher content that already exists, but it's definitely on the list of things that we can do to innovate and grow and scale our channel, which is pull in some of the favorites from the past into our channel so that people can watch it. I mean, personally, for me, when I think of classics now, this is kind of dating me, but I'm a huge Golden Girls fan and Seinfeld fan. It's not that we can necessarily go out and get those, but what kind of content does exist, especially real classics, that could go on our Shorts channel? And that's a great opportunity we have for the future.
Yeah. How are you and your colleagues getting the word out about Shorts channel so you can start building up your audience? How are you promoting yourself?
Yeah, well, we have a vast community of fans and followers and registered members on our platform. So we start with that, which is an organic reach, and let them know about the opportunities when they can submit, when they can vote, and then launching this shorts channel, we have a campaign that lets them know, hey, guess what? Now you're going to be able to watch the shorts channel across all these different devices and platforms. And so, really, it's been an organic reach, and now we get to scale and grow our audience in a really big way through this channel that we've never had before.
We are speaking with Paige Williams. She is the founder and chief executive officer of Ortpop, the company behind Shorts Channel, one of the newest smart TV set and device streaming services, currently distributed by Cinedigm, currently on Roku as part of the Roku channel, which had a bunch of channels, by the way, yesterday, their special announcement, some of whom, by the way, we have had on this program over the last month or two. And hopefully soon we'll be on a smart TV set, a smart device near you if you don't have Roku. And Paige joined us live from Missoula, Montana this half hour. On Tomorrow will be televised. Great to have you with us on this next to last day of September 2020. Simon Applebaum will be live from New York. Good to have you aboard. And if you have a question or comment remaining minutes with Paige, let the phone ring our way, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Don't forget, coming up on Friday's episode, our lead guest will be Ianthe Jones, the executive producer of Steve Harvey's Facebook Watch show, Steve on Watch, now in its second season, just got renewed for a third. Ianthe, by the way, has had a lot of experience in the world of daytime talk shows. Queen Latifah, among the people she has worked with, and we'll talk to her about what it's like to work with Steve Harvey. Then we'll find out what is Steve Harvey's future when it comes to television. So be sure to join us, Ianthe Jones from Steve on Watch, Friday, 3:10 Eastern Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. I would think that given the fact you represent a lot of filmmakers, particularly independents, that there's a lot of interest in developing television shows, maybe from some of these short subjects. Are you finding that with all these new networks that are popping up, the incredible appetite from Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and CBS All Access, soon to be Paramount Plus, Apple, et cetera, that some of the filmmakers you represent would like to do series? And if so, how are you working with them?
Yeah, absolutely. You are spot on. So we are launching a new website on our web-based platform this week, and part of that is matchmaking premium filmmakers, so our best directors and writers and producers, to streaming services that need to discover and develop original content and series. And so that is for the Hulus and the Netflixes of the world, as well as for our own channel. So we will be developing original series for Odd Pop Shorts channel, as well as for other streaming services. And it's a huge opportunity for our filmmakers. And it's, we were kind of ready for COVID because these filmmakers aren't bound by big studios and big crews and can get a lot done with a small crew in a safe environment. And so that's a really attractive proposition right now for these streaming services who desperately need innovative, authentic, high-quality content. And so we're super excited about this opportunity for our filmmakers and for where we can help them get in their careers.
I'll tell you what, if any of the filmmakers you work with and services you work with ends up in a deal for an original series, scripted, unscripted, please let us know. We'd love to feature them on our program.
Oh, thanks so much. I really appreciate that. Yeah, really appreciate that. We have a couple slated right now. One is for Black female filmmakers to highlight Black business owners high up at big companies and tell their stories. And we're working with a distributor on that one. We have an original series that will be shot here in Montana that's a really based on a book that's a super popular book. And then we have a travel show that on the slate. And then we're also looking forward to crowdsourcing ideas from our filmmakers and writers to see what else is out there and who's interested in picking up those productions. So it's a really exciting time in the company.
Yeah. What do you think about the ongoing situation with the Oscars, that because short subjects continue not to have a lot of exposure in movie theaters, that it still seems to be an also-ran with the Oscars, the best short subject categories, whether it's live action, animated, so forth. And do you see any way that perhaps maybe your channel could serve as a way to showcase these nominees in such a way that they can get more attention from the general public?
Yeah, I think it's a huge opportunity, and it's a great way to give more filmmakers, more short filmmakers, more exposure. And I also think that given the climate of content, that this is the moment that short filmmakers and short films have been waiting on. And we can help, not whether it's through the Oscars or any other sort of nomination process, get short filmmakers front and center and build their audience so that they get more exposure and more views, and they can move on into other forms of creation or stay right where they are with shorts. And I think it's really important. I think it's really relevant in that the moment for short film is now. And there have been multiple platforms over the years that have tried to do this, and it just didn't feel like it was the timing. And I think we're spot on with the timing now, especially as Hollywood moves into celebrating and appreciating diversity, not just with speech, but actually doing those things. Since we are a global, diverse film community, we help to support that in a real way that's super engaging and authentic. And so our whole point is to help filmmakers like me get more exposure. And if we can get more filmmakers to be considered for Oscars or any other show, then that's why we're here, is to advance filmmakers and their points of view, because we come from the belief that stories can change the world, even if it's making someone laugh, or it could be some, you know, other like climate change films, and all of a sudden we're using less plastic straws and less plastic bags. And I believe that that's the power of short film that can be celebrated, whether that's on the stage at the Oscars or watching a great film on Roku.
Yeah. Final thoughts. First of all, how soon will Short Channel expand beyond Roku when it comes to smart TV sets and devices? And secondly, in terms of the short subject field, any other thoughts you have in terms of working with TV festivals and film festivals in terms of acquiring talent or making connections with people who may have their product on your service?
Yeah. So Cinedigm's doing a great job of getting the word out that the Shorts channel is now available, and we're hoping for great success across multiple platforms. And, you know, hopefully over the next 6 months, we'll see that develop into tens of OTT channels that are now delivering our Shorts channel, whether that's on connected TVs or smartphones or wherever people tune in to short content. It's a big opportunity. And then in terms of working with film festivals, we do that work, and we are going to expand. So we will have short films from like the Los Angeles Film Festival and the Oxford Film Festival and the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival. So we give film festivals the opportunity to use our platform to invite their filmmakers to upload their shorts and have a channel within our channel. And so we can have the film festival channel, which is super fun and engaging for the filmmakers and for the film festival. So we love that part of our service. It's really great. I could go to a film festival and never find that film again. And so we want to be the hub for great films that you see at festivals in the shorts genre.
Mm-hmm. Again, Shorts channel is now at week number 2 on Roku. You can catch it if you have a Roku device, especially if you have the Roku channel in that device. And it will come soon to other smart TV devices as well as smart TV sets. If you want to know more details about the service, two places to go online. One, the parent company that runs Sports Channel called Autpop, and their website is autpop.com. And the distributor is Cinedigm, who we, by the way, had an interview with one of their key people, Erica Pekka, on last month, and earlier this month, I should say. And you can check out their website, www.cinedigm.com. It's www.cinedigm.com and autpop.com. Short channel, now on the Roku, and the Roku channel available soon elsewhere. Paige Williams, the founder and chief executive of Autpop and Short Channel, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on what you've done so far. Hopefully a super long run in store. And again, as you go forward in getting deals with filmmakers to develop original series for different places, we'd love to feature those filmmakers on our show. So keep us posted.
Awesome. Thanks so much. Really appreciate it, and appreciate you having me on.
Same here, Paige. All the greatest. Take care. Enjoy the week.
You too. Bye-bye.
Paige Williams from Autpop and Short Channel joining us live from Missoula, Montana. And now before we leave you, we're going to start a brand new feature. And originally I was going to call this feature A Show Not to Know. Actually do that feature. You know, shows that frankly you really shouldn't bother watching. For example, The Weakest Link, coming back to NBC. But I said, I thought, you know, hey, I just started a brand new year, being Jewish, Yom Kippur, Day of Atonement. Rather than go negative, how about going positive? So we're going to start a brand new feature called Reboot This. We're going to talk about, in this feature, shows that have a very short life on television, all different genres, and we think in this era of rebooting all types of shows deserve a second chance. Our first entry in this category is a game show that ran in syndication from 1985 to early 86. It's called Catchphrase. And the idea of the show, which was put together by Mario Pesetta, the famed producer director of the Oscars for many years, and his associate Stephen Radish, is contestants solve animated puzzles. The more they do, which they're called catchphrases, you then get a chance to earn more money by solving a super catchphrase. Once you do, and you win the game, you go on a bonus round, and you try to go for prizes and thousands of dollars in cash as well. The show is hosted by one of the best MCs in the business, Art James. It should have been a hit. It's really well done. It's a lot of fun to play. Great for audience to play at home. In fact, during the run, viewers could send their own catchphrases. They did. They want a T-shirt. What was the problem? Bad time periods and zero publicity on the part of the TV stations. And that's why it only ran 65 episodes. However, the show did have a run in England, where thanks to TBS and later other independent television networks, the show had a major run lasting about 15, 16 years. And if you haven't seen either the British version or the American version, you can on YouTube, and I think you'll really, really enjoy it. So anyway, my first nominee for Reboot This, Catchphrase. Again, if you want to see the original American version or the British version in various iterations, go to YouTube.com. I think you'll really enjoy it. I think this show worked very, very well in prime time. You could do two games or you could do one big game and make it big for our prizes. And I love the animation putting together catchphrases. It's easy to do. It's great to play along. It's a classic super game show. If you have an idea for Reboot This, if you think there's a show that you like that didn't last a long time, deserves a second chance, let me know, like our Show to Know segment. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. If we use suggestion for this Reboot This feature, we will use it and give you the credit. Again, thanks to all of our guests and all of you for being here. Don't forget, coming up on Friday, I am Anthony Jones from Steve Harvey's Facebook Watch series, Steve on Watch. We hope to have another guest as well. That's on Friday, 3:30 New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Televised. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, but include our episodes all September long, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and check out the podcast version now available on Amazon Music, as well as on iTunes, Apple TV, the Speaker Podcast Group, along with TuneIn.com and iHeartRadio.com. Again, we always love hearing from you about where you see TV at, where it's going, and we do respond in 24 hours after you make the move. So email me. Also, use Facebook, Twitter, other social media. I do respond. And why? Because now more than ever, what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Our production associate, BTR, is Mandolin. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager, with Jay Sonberg, head of content. The co-founders of BTR are Alan Levy and Bob Charish. Tomorrow, televised birthday by Audible.com and Amazon Division. Remember, Audible transformed the way you hear the world. For one free audio book, plus a one-month trial and great health wealth material, and if you're an Amazon Prime customer, make that two audio books for the trial of one, audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you know. For Tomorrow, televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. To all of you that celebrate Yom Kippur over the last 2 days, have a safe, wonderful, and fantastic new year ahead. We are back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, Amazon Music, and the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. And whatever you have to do now on Friday, please make it safe, make it great. Please, if you're dealing with the pandemic, please do it powerfully, because we want you safe and sound, and we want to lift this pandemic now and forever. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.